Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association versus Clark. Mr. Weimer.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Graham Weimer, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association, and Deputy Michael Hsu. I'm presenting this oral argument this morning, Your Honors, due in large part to the fact that the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Association recently switched representation from Sermelian Associates, who submitted the briefs and began this matter, to Van den Heuvel and Dineen, which is my firm. It's why, as you might see, the oral argument was submitted or is being presented by one firm, the briefs were submitted by a different one. This morning, I'd like to talk to you guys about two different aspects of the district court's context finding. In determining whether Deputy Hsu's July 2005 article was speaking on a matter of public concern, the district court found that, based on the context of the article, that Deputy Hsu was basically airing solely a personal grievance, and therefore his speech was not entitled to protection.
Mr. Weimer, is your argument essentially that the speech here has both a private and public component because of Deputy Hsu's effort to belittle the sheriff's Deuteronomy, quote, cannot be separated from his point concerning the abuse of departmental resources? In other words, Deputy Hsu is essentially responding to the challenge to their courage by pointing out the irony of a sheriff using public resources for personal protection and responding to the point regarding morale by indicating the impact that such abuse of department resources must have. Is that?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a good summary of it. Basically,
well, you can sit down.
The Deputy Hsu wrote this article with personal and public motives. We're not here saying that there was no personal motive to his article. He said in his deposition, and I think he'd tell you now, that he was writing it for himself. He was writing it on behalf of all of the deputies, and he was writing it on behalf of the taxpayers of Milwaukee County, who need to know whether or not the sheriff is properly allocating taxpayer resources. To answer your question,
it's part of an ongoing campaign, but push with regard to criticism of the sheriff on various aspects of his administration.
I think that's part of the dispute here, Your Honor. Yes, I would submit to you that it was. We have Memorial Day 2005. We have this issue first comes to light in terms of the public aspect of it. We have the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Union taking it to a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the sheriff was potentially allocating public resources for his own personal benefit. That's the airport and the driving by his house, patrolling specifically his house. And then,
with regard to that, does the record show that this is a one-time trip to the airport or multiple trips to the airport, or what are we talking about?
Your Honor, I believe that the record shows that this is more than a one-time. Specifically, how many times, how many trips to the airport, I don't know that that's in the record specifically. I don't know that the president of the deputies union, Roy Felber, or Deputy Hsu has personal knowledge of how many times that happened.
And the patrols with regard to the sheriff's residence were motorized patrols just riding by the house? Is that what it was?
That's correct, Your Honor. So what we have is we have the Milwaukee Deputy Sheriff's Union, who admittedly has grievances with the sheriff. They've had them. They will likely continue to have them. Some of those grievances do not rise to the level of public concern. This one, relative to whether or not the sheriff is allocating taxpayer dollars for his own benefit, whether it's to have people drive by his house when he's gone, sheriffs patrol his house, or it's to take him to the airport and escort him through the airport, this one is a public concern. And so the president of the deputies union, Roy Felber, when he went to the media, The sheriff, not surprisingly, was not very happy about that. What he was doing, you know, also not surprisingly, he thought was okay. So in response, he submits what he calls and what the defendant appellees will likely tell you was an inspirational message. The last line of a bigger part of a Deuteronomy passage from the Bible. Whether it was inspirational, I suppose, could be up to an individual person, but I personally don't see how a message about if you are afraid, if you lost your courage, go home to the people that are supposed to be working for him, that he's supposed to be leading. This doesn't seem a way to inspire anybody. In fact, what it seems is it only makes sense that he was responding to something that the sheriff's deputies did that he didn't like.
I don't understand why the association is involved in this case.
The association is involved in this case, Your Honor. I think from the aspect of the prior restraint with the confidentiality rule, I would submit to you, and I think what our argument is that this is all part of this ongoing dispute, this larger context. The Memorial Day, the fact that over the 2005 and Memorial Day, Deputy Felber, the president, went to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter. Then there was the posting from the sheriff, the article in response from Deputy Hsu, and then there was a confidentiality rule that came out the day after Deputy Hsu had his press conference about his reassignment, and that he, at that point, he had said he was filing an action. Now, there's been some talk about whether or not this prior restraint, this confidentiality rule, has been in place. Has it restrained anybody? Those sorts of things. The difference is that what the Sheriff's Department did is in 2002 they were evaluating some of their directives, including the confidentiality rule. Mm-hmm. They had some proposals. The sheriff had some, hey, here's some changes. These are suggestions.
Are these things subject to collective bargaining, the union?
The confidentiality rule?
Any of these rules.
I believe that they are. I think in terms of the specifics of directives from the sheriff to the sheriff's deputies, it sort of sometimes depends on the topic of the directive. But several of these directives, yes, are subject to collective bargaining. And we, the prior firm that represented the sheriff's union and now my firm, have also filed grievances and taken that up before the Employment Relations Commission.
Now, the new confidentiality rule, that differs from the 1984 version in designating who can provide the prior permission. But does it expand in any way the type of speech subject to the prior, subject to that prior permission requirement?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. I think basically the confidentiality rules as written now, the directive that came out July 28, 2005, it restricts speech that should be confidential. The sheriff's department, the police, you know, entity, law enforcement, they should have a confidentiality rule. There are some department matters that should be confidential. It should remain that way. But what this directive does, the way it's written now, is it restricts not only speech that owes its existence to the professional responsibilities of the deputies, but also the speech of the employees on anything related to departmental business, no matter how, what, why, who that speech is. It's a blanket statement.
And your contention is that that was not so in the 1984 version?
Yes, Your Honor, that it wasn't as broad, that what the rewriting of it did in 2005 is not only change to who a deputy has to ask permission, but also what they would have to ask permission to speak about. The 1984 version, as the sheriff's deputies union president Roy Felber said, never restricted his members from coming to speak to him about union business. This one, he's said in his deposition, it's in the record, that it's had a chilling effect on potential speech, that he knows that his members aren't coming to talk to him.
So when the department, in interpreting the same language since 1984, had not required prior permission for such speech?
If by such speech, Your Honor, you're referring to specific deputies coming to the president of the Sheriff's Deputies Union to discuss potential grievances or other issues they may have. Whether the wording did, in practice, that prior directive didn't. That confidentiality rule allowed there to be that conversation ongoing between the president or the board of trustees of the union and the deputies that were part of that union.
Is the president a member of the department?
He is. He's a sheriff's deputy as well, Your Honor.
Well, isn't there something about being able to converse with, in fact, he's another police officer, that doesn't create a problem, does it?
Your Honor, I think specifically looking at the language, it might not, it might. But in practice, it has created a problem. The president of the deputies union has said that people are afraid of the sheriff's retaliation, that the way that this rule...
That might be, but if the fact of the matter is there is a free communication between fellow officers, and he is also one of the officers, I don't see that quite the same.
I understand your point, Your Honor. I think you might be right about that.
And there's no indication that the language in the rule includes speech as a citizen.
Yes, you're right by the language of the rule that there is no indication that it includes speech as a citizen. The problem is that it says all speech related to department business. And so by not accepting speech as a citizen or speech with the union or with an attorney or potential whistleblowing, it blanketly covers everything. Your Honors, at this point, I've seen that I'm into my rebuttal time. If there's no other questions, I'd reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Winstrom?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Oyvind Winstrom with Linder & Marzak. I represent the defendants, appellees in this matter. First off, with respect to the First Amendment retaliation claim, we believe that the district court properly analyzed this case and the speech engaged in by Deputy Hsu under the Supreme Court's pronouncement in Connick versus Meyer. In
undertaking, let me ask you this. If this was viewed as speech of public concern, is there any question in your mind that there was retaliation against the deputy here?
For purposes of our motion for summary judgment, we stipulated to the fact that there was a connection between the speech engaged in by Hsu and the reassignment.
Well, other than agreeing to the facts in a summary judgment proceeding, you don't question that this was retaliation, do you?
We don't question that there's a connection between his speech and the reassignment, correct?
I mean, I don't know that there's ever been a sheriff that was forced to do what... Deputy Hsu had to that kind of assignment that he was put on. Is there any history of anybody having had to do that?
Well, there was history of a facilitator program. The sheriff had been working on putting this program together well before speech or Hsu engaged in the speech that he did. And there's
was
been officers.
A foot patrol program?
It was basically foot patrol. It was a community involvement foot patrol service in
one officer.
It was one officer. There's other officers who have engaged in the same. Assignment. He was the first. He was on the assignment for approximately 2 months, but he was. It was during
that followed him, not on at the same time.
That followed him, and some of the days that he was on assignment, there were other officers, and in fact, Sheriff Clark himself went with Deputy Hsu on a number of occasions to walk. It's basically walking through the neighborhood, interacting with citizens, interacting with businesses in the community. And ensuring that the Sheriff's Department are meeting the needs of that area.
It's very hard to see here, look at this, and say that Hsu would have got this plum assignment had he not written in the Star a criticism of the Sheriff Clark.
Certainly assignment sitting in the court system is an easier job than walking the beat in the inner city, but after all, he is a law enforcement officer, and... He's carrying a gun. It's during the daytime. His testimony was he was never afraid. He was never scared. He was never threatened at all during his short term patrolling the inner city.
What does that have to do with anything? Just because he's a brave individual or a foolhardy one,
Well, I think it goes to the question of whether or not this is actionable retaliation. Now, the district court never addressed that issue because it found in our favor on the on whether or not the speech was on a matter of public concern.
So let's do that. Let's talk about Chu's speech. His speech, though intended as recrimination, used the sheriff's abuse of departmental resources to make that point. So why isn't this a case in which speech has both a private and public element to it, in which case it should be considered protected speech, given particularly that the other two factors point towards treating it as if it were a matter of public concern? You know, the fact that Chu might have believed that his article questioned the sheriff's courage and wrote the article to throw back at him what he threw, and that Chu, Deputy Chu intended it to be a sarcastic comment, that would never transform something into a personal matter, in my mind, rather than a matter of public concern. I mean, the use of sarcasm to make a point in itself does not indicate that speech is not on a matter of political concern. If you look down the ages, through the ages, political speech often is not presented in some sort of dry, factual manner. And satire is a commonly used vehicle for making a point. So I really am having a lot of trouble with the district court's decision.
And I agree with your analysis, Judge, that satire and comedy in certain aspects can be protected speech. In this case, though, Chu testified. He was asked repeatedly in his deposition as far as his motive and why he did it. And his testimony repeatedly was, I did it to throw back at him what he threw at us. That was my soul. That, and his testimony was, that was the whole purpose of the article. There wasn't some other motive or some other reason. The union is now, and Deputy Chu is asserting, that this was connected to some other grand issue or concern between. It wasn't.
I think you and I are, you know, sort of passing each other in the night, because what I'm saying, it doesn't matter what Chu thought his Chu is noting that the sheriff is using departmental resources to give himself greater protection than that which is available to the public. And he's noting that such excesses are harmful for morale. The statement can't be characterized as purely personal in nature when its point depends on the revelation of the improprieties which are clearly of public concern. So
I understand and I agree that the issues of department use of resources is an issue of public concern, absolutely. But if you look at the point and the way that he wrote this, he's directly challenging the courage of the sheriff, even though he doesn't think that the sheriff lacks courage, and he's saying, if you lack courage, and he's using these two things as examples of why he believes potentially that the sheriff lacks courage, he's saying, if you, sheriff, lack courage, then you should resign, and that would improve the morale of the entire department. He's basically saying, sheriff, we want you to go home, we want you to resign, and we, you know, the deputies, that would make deputies happy and improve the morale. The fact that he's referencing the use of department resources, he's doing that merely to make a point that he believes the sheriff lacks courage. He believes the sheriff lacks courage, potentially because he needs an officer to escort him through the airport and other officers to drive by his home when he's on vacation or out of town. But he's using those not to further some greater public interest or public good. He's using those merely as examples to say, sheriff, perhaps you lack courage. If you need these things when you're out of town, perhaps you lack courage, and perhaps you should resign so you can improve the morale of this department. That is not an issue of public concern. He's speaking purely personally. He's doing it to throw back at the sheriff what the sheriff had thrown at him, and he's not doing this because of some greater political debate or some other greater issue.
And you don't, believe that this is a case in which speech has both elements. It has a private element to it, but it also has a public element to it. It's a subtle sort of idea, perhaps, but...
In filing a motion for summary judgment, Your Honor, we proposed a finding of fact with respect to the motivation, the fact that his motivation was to throw back at the sheriff what he threw at us, and that it was a sarcastic comment. That was an undisputed proposed finding of fact. Nowhere in the transcript or nowhere in the material submitted to the district court did they ever argue that this was related to some greater issue or some public debate concerning the department's use of resources. At this point, before this court, Your Honors, they're trying to argue that the prior attention, media attention in May of 2005, resulted in the sheriff putting on the quotation from Deuteronomy. There is absolutely no evidence of a connection between those two things.
How long is the sheriff's term?
I believe it's a 4-year term.
Is he in his first term, or is he running again? What's the situation?
He was originally appointed, I believe, in 2002, and I may have my dates wrong, but he's serving, I believe, his second term currently.
Does Wisconsin have a term limit?
For sheriffs, I don't believe they do.
If public official A accused public official B of accepting bribes, and to retaliate for that, public official B provide an example of public official A taking bribes, is it your position that the motive of public official B would render this private speech rather than speech on a matter of public concern?
Again, I think you have to look at the overall context, content, and point of the speech and the form of the speech. Simply because something has a purely personal motive, oftentimes we'll take it out of the context of being protected by the First Amendment. But overall, you have to look at all three elements. And even though the district court in this case said the issues of the content and the issue of form weigh in favor of finding that the speech was protected, you know, this is not an individual who is writing an editorial article in the Journal Sentinel. He's making a retort, a snappy retort in a union newsletter that has very limited circulation, and it's very convoluted. Somebody reading this without understanding the background between the sheriff's department and the union, and the issue that the posting by the sheriff in the first place, it would be lost on the general public. Well, somebody reading this wouldn't understand what he's even referring to.
Well, how is this case any different from, you know, the two public officials? To get back at the sheriff's comment, Deputy Shoup pointed to the sheriff's misuse of departmental resources as calling into question his courage and the impact on morale, just as public official B pointed to public official A's taking of bribes. Where's the difference there? I mean, why do we have to have, you know, more context?
Well, and I think perhaps the issue of public officials taking bribe has much more of a public concern to it than the speech engaged in by Shu here. But if in your situation, Your Honor, if it's purely motivated by personal animosity and there's no other motivation, perhaps that speech would be protected. But here you're dealing with a situation where you have very limited circulation of a comment that's very convoluted, and it's not for the purpose of bringing this issue of use of department resources to anybody's attention. He's doing this because he felt his courage was challenged, and he now wants to throw back at the sheriff and challenge his courage.
So you say that, you know, very limited group of people. It was my understanding from reading the briefs that all Milwaukee was buzzing about this situation. I mean, it may have started.
Yeah, we have very little to do in Milwaukee. We buzz about it a lot.
Well, certainly once the reassignment occurred, there was some buzz about that, and there were some articles in the paper and an editorial and some of those things. But prior to that point, the alleged attention that was drawn in May or during the Memorial Day weekend, very, very limited. There's, in fact, no evidence of any newspaper articles. What we have is evidence of a union president going to speak to a news reporter.
But look at what grew out of all this. I mean, you know, Thomas Paine's tiny little leaflet started out as a tiny little leaflet and brought about a new world order.
No, certainly there was some attention drawn to that, but it goes back to the fact of is the speech protected in the first place? If the speech that Hsu engaged in was not protected, then the sheriff had the right to do what he did. The district court never even got to the issue of the Pickering balancing and whether or not the sheriff had the right to regulate the speech, even if it was protected by the Constitution. So I think by looking at the reassignment, we're getting ahead of ourselves because there's a number of other issues that this court...
Who establishes the sheriff's budget for the sheriff's department?
I believe he's involved himself in drafting his budget, or some of his people are involved in that budgetary process.
Well, I guess my question is, who makes the determination on what funds are expended for what within the sheriff's department?
Well, I believe the sheriff has the authority. If you're asking with respect to having somebody taken to the airport and somebody driving by his home when he's gone, he has the authority to do that and to allocate those resources that he sees fit. Now, what I don't believe is in the record is his motivation or his reason for doing that.
In any event, he receives monies to operate the department and then makes decisions on how that money is spent?
Correct.
Were there any instances under the 1983 confidentiality rules in which an employee was disciplined for failing to seek prior permission for speech? And if so, can you identify what type of speech that involved?
There has been no evidence of any discipline of any deputies under either the old rule or the new rule. And we would argue to the court that there really was no difference. The essence of the old rule and the essence of the new rule limited and protected the same universe of speech, although, as pointed out by Your Honor, there's a difference in the way that somebody would get permission to speak rather than going to a supervising officer. The sheriff wanted now individuals to go to him or his designee. So the universe of people who could authorize or approve the speech is limited or smaller than it was under the old rule. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Our main contention relative to the content, form, and context is that, number one, the context was improperly elevated above content and form in this matter, and number two, that the district court erred in not considering the record as a whole, as Connick informs us. The defendant appellees almost makes one of our points for us. It's that when considering context, when context trumps content and form, it's in situations where the speaker had a purely private motive, that their only motive was to speak on issues or circumstances related to their personal elements of their personal disputes. What we have here is not that. Admittedly, we have a situation where the speaker had a private motive, but it wasn't a purely private motive. There was also some public concern. What happens if we go with what the defendants are arguing is that context ends up becoming dispositive. And we've been told, this court has held, that that's not what we want to do, that content is the most important, and that while motive matters, it's not dispositive. The situation, Your Honors, with the sheriff and the sheriff's department, his term ends in 2010. Right now, the indications are that he's going to try and run again. And I believe that the county board ultimately oversees how much money he gets, that sort of thing out of the budget. This union newsletter, the Star, does go to the county board. And so it's important in terms of the back and forth between the members of the sheriff's department, the deputies, that they also send this newsletter to them. They send it to retired members, people that advertise.
How large is the department?
It's about 500 deputies. There's more than that in terms of sergeants, captains, the rest of it, but there's about 500 deputies. All of which are able to submit articles to the union newsletter. It comes out monthly if it can. The president of the union, the deputies union, is also the editor-in-chief of the newsletter. What we don't want to happen is we don't want context to become a litmus test by which the public concern element of the Connick-Pickering balancing test is measured. We have a situation here where content and form, the district court that found that Deputy Hsu was speaking on a matter of public concern. And then when analyzing the context, said that there was a personal motive here, and summary judgment was granted. What we are arguing, Your Honors, is that that was improper, that improperly elevated context above content and form. The defendants would have you analyze the context of this case looking solely at the sheriff's Bible post and Deputy Hsu's response. We're also here saying to you that there was more going on than just that. And even if that was the sole context, limited to just the quote-unquote inspirational quote and the response, even the response, because it addresses a matter of public concern. Your Honors, thank you. We would just ask that you overturn the grant of summary judgment.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.